This is from Wikipedia. Religion is a cultural system of behaviors and practices, worldviews, sacred texts, holy places, ethics, and social organization that relate humanity to what an anthropologist has called an order of existence. That's a religion. Do you understand that? It's really broad and somewhat really vague. To a point, anything I do with a certain strong belief could be considered as a religious act. According to this Wikipedia, not sure how accurate that is, but as of 2010, there are about 10,000 distinguished religions in the world. 10,000. Though about 84% of all people who claim self-defined as religious are affiliated to the kind of five major ones. So Christianity is number one, about 33%. Islam second, about 19%, and Hinduism, Buddhism, and then the fourth religion. That's how it goes. So I ask a very bold question: can there be one true religion? And answer is actually no and yes, and yes and no. And that's how it goes. One thing that came to me very strong in this research, every time I do something, preach, deliver message, I restart my research all over again. I had to because I have nothing written left. So I can't really recycle my previous sermons or messages. One thing really struck me really hard this time is in defining what religion is, we somehow have two strong branches of human mind working about it. And though, yet in appearance, one branch gets much stronger authoritative respect and the other one somewhat less. Actually, one is academic intellectual mindsets. Why? Because they write books. And they write logical arguments. So it sounds more convincing in a way. And if you read religious history or history of religions, the books written by more scholarly-minded religious leaders had more appealing or more authority, especially when it is institutionalized and making dogmas, doctrines. That's where the strength comes in. But yet, if you also read the religion, especially its backbone of spirituality, there are the people you cannot ignore. They are called mystics. And mystics are the ones who claim to experience something that they defined as the presence, as real as, or more real than their own body. And the readings that today we have, Prophet Isaiah, most prophets are actually mystics. In a way, that's why the prophecy is so hard to understand sometimes. Because the way mystics experience and the way mystics try to communicate what they experienced, there's nothing really logical about. And I'm not going to go into whole conversation about what we define as logic. You know, in a simple way, to me, logic means if I can reasonably understand what you mean, I agree that's logical. Or sometimes, you know, that basic logic, A equals B, B equals C, Therefore, A equals C. But is that really true in all contexts? Not really. In the contextual way, that's not exactly the same. And even nowadays, we know in this particles world of quantum mechanics, that's a whole new world that opened to us. Still, we're still trying to understand what that even means. But one thing that we learned from them is the reality within the smallest thing that actually makes who we are, things are very interestingly different. And right now, there has been debate. Now they agree that it's both is, particle. Is it wave or is it a particle? The smallest thing that you would see. Energy, matter, kind of they are, in a way, same. So the way I perceive in this research about religion is it is arguably, amazingly, kind of same thing that people are talking about, at least in the beginning of all religion. There are, somehow, always begin with mystics. I haven't found a single religion that actually started with a scholar. If you know one, let me know. Scholars usually come second or third generation of that religion, and they are the ones, create and kind of invent this huge vehicle of theology or system that really can popularize and then also create people so that people can come in and understand and connect. But it always starts with mystics. Buddha is a mystic, and Confucius is in a way a mystic too. You may argue about it, but if you really read about Confucius, he's more mystic than a scholar. And Jesus, was he a scholar? He's definitely a mystic. How about Muhammad? Was he a scholar? And so and so forth. So if you really read these days and religious conflict and the people who either, really strongly support a certain religion or shows a strong hatred against a certain religion, where does that come from? In my experience, either sometimes it's from this very well-defined scholarly work about what is and what is not, and you are Christian, this is not, so you should not like this. It's kind of, in a way, black and white, but sometimes that's how religion teaches, right? I grew up in a very conservative, fundamental Christian church in Korea. And first thing I learned when I was 14 was that only Christians are going to heaven. But, by the way, not all Christians go to heaven. And then in that even smaller whisper, I was heard that the people who come to our church goes to heaven. That really shook me well to the bottom of my, then what is it? So, but how is it possible? How is it possible? It's in a way, it's a human nature. That there's a part that human nature comes in. That, we want to deny it. We want to not accept it. But there's a strong part that we're very self-centered. And within the self-centeredness, actually selfishness. And selfishness is, according to Swedenborg, it could be defined as, in a way, any action I deliver, if I intend a benefit to me, that could be selfish action. But there is a selfish action that is a benefit to me and benefit to you. That's less selfish. But there is real selfishness is, I only do anything if it's benefit to me. If I'm not going to do anything if there's no benefit to me. Even if, like, I lose one, you gain 1,000, not going to do it. Why? I lose one. But if you lose 10,000, I gain one, I'll do it. Because my benefit for me. That's the extreme of selfishness. So why am I saying this? Is because in my study of religion, religion started with the mystics. The mystics were enlightened and deeply connected to this deep reality, God, divine, Buddha, that connects us all, which is full of love, which is amazingly peaceful. And they want to somehow communicate that to us. Like within deeper side of our mind is this, you can say a door, you can say a mechanism, something that lead us to this deeper reality that will just bring us into a true peace and this almost transcendental love or experience of love. Problem is, getting there is not just automatic thing. And it's not about hierarchy. Okay? People who are closer to God is not higher than people who are not. But when it is institutionalized as a religion, suddenly mystics are all out of the leadership positions. And who comes in? Well, at first comes in academia, but academia is also not really in the leadership positions afterwards. So this is how religious history happens, repeating over and over again. There are pure mystics who experience this amazing reality, wants to share it to all humanity, because that's the way all humans are supposed to live and experience. Amazing. And then there's academia who comes in and conceptualize it and articulate. So they put it into the language that can be understood by all people. We can read and listen to it, which still is amazing. But then third part happens, then it's not that amazing anymore. Third part comes in and they create a system, they create a hierarchy. It becomes suddenly, I'm higher, you're lower, I can command you, you have to obey me, you have to obey this, you have to listen to this. This is the right way, that's the wrong way. These people go to heaven, these people should go to hell. That happens. And every religion has it, somehow. Every religion. It doesn't matter. Buddhism, unless you don't have heaven and hell, like a Taoistic belief, it's not really religion even in a way. But if it turns into be religion, somehow there's a mechanism comes in and a judgment saying who is right and who is wrong and who goes to heaven, who goes to hell, and who is higher, who's lower. Where does that come from? So to me, that's really from the dark side of the human nature that desires power. There's a Chinese ancient proverb saying power can't be shared even by family. And the historical record shows, 60 or 70% of Chinese emperors were actually assassinated. They were, okay, let's put it another, factually, I don't know they're assassinated. They died without natural cause. That was actual writing. They died. Not by a natural cause. Okay? Why? There's a power. And that's what kind of Swedenborg, this guy Swedenborg, I believe pretty amazing guy, is that in his picture, in his understanding, you know, he talks about heaven and hell too, yes, and there's some part I love and some part that's still problematic. But the bottom of hell there is this people is this desire. The desire is desire to dominate, desire to control. That is the bottom of hell. And he kind of turns that, put it into our context, is that as a human, that is the hardest desire to give up. And if you connect it to this, in all religion, your final enemy is ego. Right? Ego. What is ego? Ego is actually your controlling system of the worldview. That you develop a certain way of seeing things. And things should be this way or that way. And based on that system, you make a value judgment. What? This is good. This is not. This is worthwhile. That's worth less. And if somebody comes and saying, you have to give it up, what would you say? Probably will say, hell no. Why? Because that's how you, in a way, control your world. And actually, as a parent, there's this desire pops in my heart almost every day that I have to fight and manage and try to see which is proper, is try to control my children. You know, their behaviors, what they think, what they like, what they don't like, what they should wear, not to wear, what they should eat, not to eat, right? What friends they should hang out, what TV shows they should watch, what games they should play or shouldn't play. Right? What time they should go to sleep or not, even drink water or not. Well, to a degree, I control that. And my justification is it's good for them. And I believe to a degree it's very true. But there's a certain, when it goes a little more than the proper extent, then what happens? I am controlling them. And why I do it? Because in a way, I can. So, can there be one true religion? Christian movement, actually, Christianity has something special about. I'm not saying that all these dogmas and systems and all this other things, but in a very fair and in a very objective way, Christian movement is very special, unique movement in whole religious history. And it started somewhat with this movement that people in all the Western world wanted to get out of these ancient religious practices that were so superstitious and even hurting people, which almost was nonsense to them. For instance, if you're to travel, you need to make like at least 5 sacrifices or bring, you know, 5 offerings, one to the Zeus, one to this god, one to that god. We're talking like these are all nonsense joke, like, but if you go to the, you know, before Christ time, well, these gods were actually believed to be real, and people believed that they had to do that. And then there was this growth of people saying, that doesn't really look right, but how really God works, they didn't really know, in a way. So, according to Paul Tillich, this Christian first, scholars called apologists, who wrote the theology about apologetics, is that they try to defend and kind of explain what Christianity is. And in the context is that they wanted to communicate to all the Christian, the Christ, the Logos, embraces all truth. Every truth that makes sense to any human should be able to be embraced by Jesus Christ. Because Christ is the incarnation of the Logos, the divine truth. That's why first Christian movement was called as Catholic, meaning universal. Everybody is welcome. And you can find a place there. That's, again, first, second generation. And when it becomes third and fourth generation, it became different animal. Still, there is this concept and hope and somewhat pursuing that what can be the true religion for all. And my belief is there can be one religion, one true religion for all, but we may need to wait another 1,000 years. Because I'm kind of the same way too. I find myself constantly evaluating, judging, and saying like, I constantly do, okay, so that's worth, that's not. And as long as I do that, and as long as I say to the religion that is not known to me, saying, I'm not going to accept it, as long as we all kind of make in a way that what is familiar to me should be right. That's the hard thing. So what Swedenborg, in a way, says is that, and also that's what all the mystics are saying. I kind of have a book, The Visions of God. I almost wanted to read like 3 chapters here, but I'm not going to do that. But it's called Visions of God, and it's about the mystics, Christian mystics, in the 14th century, 15th century. And, you know, what they are trying to say is, in a way, exactly the same thing what as later Swedenborg was trying to say, and what I would love to say, is we somehow has to acknowledge that we need to transcend or evolve to be a higher being. There is need for that. And it is not because God tells you, it's not the mandate, it's not a commandment, because that actually fulfills us much deeply, and that completes us as a human. And yet, this is also based on principle of one religious view. But somehow, all religion agrees in that context. What we all disagree is how to do it, and more likely, whose way is the right way. So, whose way is the right way? Should we spend time to discuss about it, or should we just deduce what is right or what is good, and live a good life together? That's a hard thing. One last thing I would like to share is that one evening, actually, long time ago, I was youth chaplain, and I was listening to this youth group planning about activity for tomorrow, and they were supposed to have a meeting 10 minutes and just figure out what to do tomorrow, and then go have fun. Instead, that day, they somehow were arguing about 2 hours. And as I was listening, whenever that happens, I don't do anything. I just listen to it, unless they ask me to involve. So I was just sitting there listening to them. And the argument is, you know, very simple. There's a guy A, and there's a girl B. And whose way is the right way? They're trying to do exactly the same thing, which is to have fun. Right? You're to have fun. But he's thinking his way is the right way. And she's thinking her way is the right way. And as they are strong voice and they are leaders of some odd groups, the kids are divided in two. They didn't make any choice. They actually asked me at the end of 2 hours of long conversation and argument, I simply asked, are you having fun now? And they said, no. What are you doing? They somehow lost what they were trying to do. So go back to the very basic, simple thing, right? What are you trying to do? What fills your heart? And if matter is your choice, what would you choose? What would you choose? Sometimes that's the most important, your choice. May God bless you all and guide your mind and heart, finding and experiencing the divine within you. Amen.